The time is 2 p.m. on May 6th. For the record, we have Representative Lancaster, Foster, myself, Williams, Co-Chair Mulder, Vice Chair Bundy, Representative Whitaker, and Representative Davies. For the record, we have four bills before us. We heard 319 earlier, and there was some discussion, a question at one time. Representative Mulder.
Mr. Chairman, I have moved that the committee pass from committee the right CS for 319 with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Any objection? Not. Bill moves from committee. Senate Bill 37. Senator Kelly. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're a representative.
Mr. Chairman, I was under the impression that my chair had been retired. I don't understand why Representative Hudson's name is on there.
It was tough to hang it from the wall.
Thank you, and thank you, members of the committee, for hearing this bill. I have brought this bill before you to attempt to address some inequities that have developed over the last decade in the healthcare industry. Recently, the number of health insurance providers has been dramatically reduced as a result of mergers and acquisitions between previous competitors. Physicians who have to deal with these mega companies are put in a rather difficult situation. Essentially, they have to deal with these companies to stay in business, but strict antitrust laws put them at a distinct disadvantage and put them in a somewhat of a take-it-or-leave-it situation. They have no ability to come together as a group, even discuss or let alone negotiate the terms of contracts. The Supreme Court recognized that, and they recognized that the antitrust provisions, which are generally there to protect the smaller companies from the larger companies, could actually have the opposite effect in some cases. That is why they created the state action doctrine. It allows, well, in this case, it allows physicians to come together and to negotiate with insurance companies under the oversight of the Attorney General. If I may, Mr. Chairman, read from a letter from Representative Bob Barr and John Conyers of the Congress of the United States. They are jointly sponsoring a piece of legislation similar to the one that you have in front of you. There are obviously some differences, but the intent is the same. And these are the words of these two representatives. When physicians attempt to negotiate patient care issues with these large health plans, they are at a severe disadvantage. In fact, actual negotiations are rare due to the take-it-or-leave-it contracts forced upon healthcare providers. Ironically, federal antitrust laws, which were intended to protect the Davids of the world against the Goliaths, are having the opposite effect in the healthcare market. Federal laws are being used as a wall between doctors and their patients. To remedy this imbalance, we have joined together in a bipartisan effort to enable physicians and other healthcare professionals to effectively and fairly negotiate with health plans without fear of violating provisions of the antitrust law. And if I could be given leave just to read one more thing, and it's from the council, the city council, I think it is, in Washington, D.C., who is also considering this thing. The council finds that joint negotiations by competing physicians of certain terms and conditions of contracts with health plans will result in pro-competitive effects in the absence of any express or implied threat of retaliatory joint actions such as boycotts and strikes. They go on to talk about the fact that including price in these negotiations could have an anti-competitive effect, but I just assure you that this bill does not have price in it, and it is restricted to terms and conditions and quality of care. Likewise, it has provisions in this bill not to allow boycotts or any kind of retaliatory actions by the physicians. Furthermore, the bill is voluntary, so those who have been concerned that it might tend to increase health care costs or to exclude others from negotiations or to exclude others from engaging in business in the healthcare industry, you need to know this is voluntary. At any time the insurance companies want to get out of negotiations with the doctors, all they have to do is say they don't want to do it anymore. Likewise, the doctors have that ability, and the Attorney General at any time can end these negotiations, so they won't have an impact on price. Price fixing will still be illegal under this bill. There are probably a number of technical questions you may have on this bill. I have some people who are here to answer those kinds of technical questions. Mr. Mike Haugen, who's in the office, Jim Jordan, who's online, and is Rebecca Bedura. Rebecca's a woman from the AMA. And so with that, I would entertain some general questions, and then I've got to get back over to Senate Finance.
Any questions for the sponsor at this time, Representative Davies?
Senator Kelly, one of the concerns that's been expressed is that you said it's voluntary, but that you go into the process, the docs get together and start the process, and then you go down the road a ways, and then people decide to opt out. But by that time, the communications have already happened. Have you heard that criticism and thought about it?
If you could maybe further specify the nature of the criticism.
I'm trying to make my question in non-pejorative terms here.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, try to clarify the question. I guess and I'm not sure I totally understand it either because I don't know all the details of your bill. But I guess the concern that I've heard expressed is that you start the process and then the communications that some might conclude to be collusion happen, and then you go down the road a ways, and then you decide to opt out. But that communication the collusion has already occurred.
Mr. Chairman, that's a criticism I honestly haven't run into in all the committee meetings that we've had. I haven't given it that much thought. It seems to me that the issue is that to have those kinds of conversations in the first place, which I think makes sense, particularly since the nature of healthcare industry has changed so much, where you have these mega companies and they have all of the resources and you may be dealing with just a handful of independent physicians. But that is the point of the bill. I understand you were just trying to further clarify your point by using the word collusion. I don't think collusion is the right word. The kind of communication that they're going to be engaging in are going to be communications that have, in some cases, and in many cases, the best interests of their patients in mind. And I would point to an example where an insurance company could actually not only require that the physician, that they not pay for, say, a higher level of care in a given situation, but they could also require, under the terms of the contract, that the physician not even communicate those higher levels of care to a patient in an attempt to keep costs down. Communications between doctors on those kinds of contracts so that maybe they can have some effect at protecting their patients, I think would be a good idea. I don't necessarily think that with the collusion would apply there. Maybe when you're talking about price, and I would even argue that might be a bit of a stretch, but when you're talking about price, maybe that argument is a little more valid. But I think when you're talking about terms and conditions of contracts, or terms and conditions of payment, those kinds of things, and quality of care, I don't think it's that dangerous.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Certainly the logic of allowing doctors to discuss patient care and work toward the what's best for the patient seems like it shouldn't even be in front of us. It should be so obvious. My question is, the CS that we have before us, would this allow that sort of communication to take place with other health practitioners other than doctors?
Between doctors and other health practitioners?
No, between other health practitioners. Between this, not only between doctors, but between nurse practitioners.
Oh. No, the nurse practitioners had come to us and wanted to be exempted from the bill. And so we put language in there that specifically exempts them from the bill.
That wasn't my impression.
Maybe I didn't understand the question. Would you like for Mr. Hogan to maybe address that question?
Mm-hmm. Please come forward and state your name for the record.
My name is Mike Hogan. I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Physicians and Surgeons. It's an IPA in Anchorage representing about 160 doctors. To answer your question specifically, this bill was tailored for physicians only. We were advised by the legal counsel of the American Medical Association that under the state action doctrine, which is a Supreme Court doctrine, the AMA legal counsel advised us that each particular provider group really needs to petition the state in which they practice for their own version of this bill. Because the idea was, one of the requirements of the state action doctrine is a clearly articulated desire on the part of the state to implement a bill like this. If you start mixing a lot of different provider groups together in a bill like this, it's not like a prompt pay bill. It could technically violate the requirements of the state action doctrine.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'll have to allege legal, but I don't understand what the difference would be to have two separate bills or two groups in the same bill as far as legal ramifications. But back to my original question. If this is a good medical practice for doctors to be able to discuss the patient's needs, why wouldn't we want all medical practitioners to do that?
Well, I think you would. We actually approached the nurses with an offer several months ago that they could borrow the language of our bill verbatim. And if they wanted to petition you for their own version of this bill, that was fine with us. We'd actually help them if they wanted to. We didn't receive an answer from them at that point, but they may do that in the future. We were just taking the advice of the American Medical Association's legal counsel and Becky DeDura, and they have informed us that to keep this as clean as possible, that the physicians as a provider group should be singled out, and that's why we have been working on this bill for the last 3 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions?
Can you bring him back up for either one of them?
We could have them both here right now. It's fine.
I'm sorry, what's
Mike Hogan.
Yeah, if I could ask a question.
You care to give any more comments to the bill? You were up for signed up.
I do, but if you'd like to ask a question, I'll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hogan, could we, under current FTC rules, could the doctors negotiate for the medical necessity term in insurance contract? It seems to me there's a distinction between the price of a tonsillectomy and whether I, as a physician, have the independent judgment to choose what course of medical conduct is appropriate for my patients. And with the price provision out, can you negotiate medical necessity with the bill? Can you negotiate medical necessity without the bill under current FTC exceptions?
The answer to your question, as far as I understand, is currently, without the bill, you could not. That's why we actually tried to include a statutory definition of medical necessity 2 years ago when we worked on the Patient Bill of Rights. With this, with passage, hopeful passage of this bill, excuse me, one of the non-fee issues could be medical necessity and defining in the contract what it is. It is very common in these provider contracts or physician contracts to include some sort of a definition of medical necessity, and they're all over the map. And there are uniformly written by legal counsel for the carriers at this point. And physicians are given no input on what those definitions are.
And on the idea of state action, it was my understanding that something more was required to get a state exception, a state action exception in the federal law. You had to not just set this up, but have some substitution of judgment. I don't think that's the legal term, but that the state had to be actively involved more along the model of the RCA than simply authorizing discussions. Does this fit, in your opinion, the current bill under the state action exception?
It does. The two main requirements are clearly articulated desire on the part of the legislature. Second is active state oversight. And in the bill, the Attorney General is involved really at every stage of the process, before, during, and after. The Attorney General has veto power over the contract after it's finalized. The Attorney General feels that the contract is not in the best interest of the citizens of the state. At any time during the process, they can pull the plug. This bill is entirely voluntary on the part of the carriers, the physicians, and the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Be up to the committee on what we do with this.
Thank you.
You're there.
I've stated a fair bit of what I'd like to talk about, but some criticisms of the bill that have surfaced are now that the fee negotiation has been pulled, that the bill really doesn't do anything anymore. That why are we even here if it doesn't include fees. And our opinion is that it does do a lot. The bill really addresses two major areas of concern. The first is patient advocacy issues. Some of the issues we could discuss if this bill were passed were things like quality assurance issues, clinical practice guidelines, utilization review issues, and patient referral procedures. We feel that there could be substantial cost savings if physicians are allowed to, as a group, point out to the insurance carriers where the inefficiencies in the market are. This bill would go a long way to lowering the tension level among physicians and allow them to come together and address some of them. And the other part of this bill would really address what we feel are some of the most egregious aspects of some of these contracts that physicians have to look at. Things like some of the contracts don't require mutual written consent to change the terms, material terms of contracts. We'd like to see that. That there be no unilateral contract termination without notice and an explanation to the physicians. Another good example would be no continued indefinite treatment of patients after a plan becomes insolvent. Some of these contracts require that even if the plan goes out of business, the doctor has to continue to treat the patient for months or sometimes years, depending on the severity of the illness. These are just a few examples of many issues that we think make this bill worthwhile. And if you have any more questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Are there any questions for Michael? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bundy?
I have a constituent who's a nurse practitioner that I'd like to ask a question of, if you wouldn't mind calling forward.
Is it Kathy Grusel?
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Please come forward and state your name and who you represent.
My name is Kathy Giesel. I'm with the Alaska Nurse Practitioner Association.
Mr. Chairman? I mean, if you have an opening statement, go ahead. I have a question later.
Well, I did. I had some things I wanted to share with the committee. You're going to hear from the FTC and the Division of Insurance and also the AARP, which is a consumer group, as to their concerns about this bill. Earlier today, I had a conversation with Senator Kelly, and I'm going to share with you what we discussed concerning SB 37. As you probably know, the nurse practitioners, nurse midwives have all ardently opposed this bill. What I want to share with you today is our reasons for that and where we are at the current time. The original bill, in the original form, provided only for physicians. It sort of ignored the fact that nurse practitioner, nurse midwives, physical therapists, nurse anesthetists all exist and are very valuable healthcare providers. We were excluded from the competitive marketplace, it appeared to us, in this bill originally. So we expressed concern about this. Specifically, our exclusion from reimbursement. Labor and Commerce heard our concern. They removed cost, as it's generally referred to, the cost piece from this bill, and we appreciate that very much. We were also concerned that this bill would jeopardize our practice. We right now, under Alaska State statute, have independent practice. Many nurse practitioners own their own clinics. Judiciary heard that concern. They put in protective language for us. On page 2, line 13, physicians may not negotiate the exclusion of providers who are non-physicians from direct reimbursement by a health benefit plan and may not negotiate the setting in which providers who are non-physicians deliver services. We appreciate that protective language. We fundamentally dislike SB 37 because from our perspective, it lays the foundation that prospectively in the future, we could be, amendments could be added that would be detrimental to us. We appreciate the changes, however. We appreciate that cost was taken out and the protective language was put in. We would ardently oppose this bill if the price were, if cost were put back in or that protective language were removed. We believe that that would negatively impact health care in Alaska. We will continue our surveillance of SB 37, and you will hear from us if we believe we're being excluded from a competitive marketplace as a result of this bill.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, and that's a little bit, doesn't quite mesh with my understanding of previous testimony where nurse practitioners were consulted and you said you didn't really want to be included in this bill.
I have checked with our lobbyist, who has, of course, been front line on this bill. She had never heard that we were approached on this issue, and I have never known that we were approached on being included in this bill.
And Ms. Chairman, come on. And are you aware of any problems at the federal level if we had more than one healthcare provider in a single bill versus running separate bills?
Not that I'm aware of, but this is the first I've heard of that it was even being considered. We've talked about it among ourselves. I don't think it still addresses the fundamental concerns that FTC has about a non-competitive workplace. But including more providers in it might address some of those concerns. I really have not had an opportunity to even explore that.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you please explain to me how you would anticipate nurse practitioners would be excluded from the competitive marketplace given the passage of this bill?
At this point, the way it has been modified in its current form, we don't believe we would be, because it states here very clearly that we cannot be negotiate the exclusion of providers who are non-physicians in either reimbursement or setting. The way the bill originally read, the potential was there for physicians to negotiate reimbursement with insurance companies that could define nurse practitioners as unacceptable providers. There is some contentions, I would say, perhaps between the medical community and the nurse practitioner community as we seek to serve healthcare needs and concern about quality of care and things like that. Physicians, we believed, had the potential to say nurse practitioners would be excluded from reimbursement, they wouldn't be able to practice independently, et cetera. Granted, it wasn't specifically outlined here, but it was something we could see evolving from this bill.
Are you still concerned with that eventual evolution?
It's a possibility with amendments, though as it stands right now, we're comfortable with this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Is anyone from the department, Ed Sniffen, did you care to comment on this?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Ed Sniffen from the Department of Law and members of the committee. The department has spoken out against this bill for many years now in front of various different committees, and originally the bill did contain some other provisions that have recently been removed, but our primary concern has been with the state action doctrine and whether or not this particular piece of legislation rises to that standard to provide any kind of immunity to the doctors who might take advantage of this legislation to engage in these kinds of negotiations. And in the House Labor and Commerce Committee, we heard from the Federal Trade Commission that the body of this bill does not rise to that level, and that has been our position for some time. Now, granted, without the price provisions in this bill, the anti-competitive concerns have been alleviated somewhat. But if the doctors are going to engage in any kind of activity that they think might cross the line between quality of care and price and rely on the provisions of this bill to protect them from that, I think that would be a mistake. And I think the FTC has made it clear that they would still retain jurisdiction to take prosecutorial action if necessary in those circumstances. So I don't know that this bill provides the level of protection that doctors think it will. And whether you're negotiating for medical necessity or whatever terms you'd like to talk about, I know Mr. Hogan just testified that this bill still has some utility even without price because it allows doctors to do some other things that perhaps they can't already do under current FTC guidelines. But substitute what you will, this bill still does not rise to the level of providing the kinds of protections that the FTC and the state action doctrine contemplate. And just a few other comments, and there is, by the way, and I'm sure the committee has either seen it or heard of it, there's a January 18, 2002 letter from the FTC to Madam Chair Lisa Murkowski from the House Labor and Commerce Committee that outlines their concerns with the state action doctrine aspects of this bill. And during a hearing before the Labor and Commerce Committee, the FTC testified that they had concerns with this bill, and then without the price provisions, they questioned the utility for this legislation. The fiscal note that we've submitted along with this bill is something in the range of $114,000, and we have to question whether or not we need to be spending that kind of money to oversee a process that really requires no oversight if the doctors currently can negotiate quality of care issues anyway. That's something for the committee to consider. And finally, I would like to mention, too, that this is a voluntary act, as the sponsor of the bill have indicated, but voluntary, only on the part of the providers and the healthcare management companies. The Attorney General's office really is stuck in a position of not being able to just cut this process off whenever it would like. If you look on page 5 of the reviewing these negotiations, and the language is fairly clear. The Attorney General shall approve a collective negotiation contract if two conditions are met. There is nothing really discretionary in there. So it's a little harder for the Attorney General to stop this process than it would be for the other participants. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have, and I thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony.
Thank you, Ed. Representative Davies.
Actually, I think he answered my question. Thanks.
Okay. Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ed, do you feel that physicians could negotiate medical necessity now, and could they under SB 37?
Representative Croft, through the chair, that's a good question, and we were discussing that exact issue while we were waiting for this committee to start. And I think that's it's a vague question, but I do know this. If they could discuss it now under FTC guidelines, they can certainly discuss it whether this bill exists or not. If this bill is in place, it won't make a difference because this bill doesn't provide any state action immunity anyway. So if they can't discuss it now, they won't be able to discuss it under the guise of this bill. At least that's our position.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Davies?
Thank you. Ed, in your opinion, what structure would the state have in place to provide that immunity?
Representative Davies, through the chair, that's another very good question, and we thought about that for some time. And the structure that I think of that does meet this kind of state action immunity that the U.S. Supreme Court contemplated is something like the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, you know, where you have an agency that is responsible for reviewing these matters, taking public testimony on them. There's an appeals process. There's public comment available. The agency does an investigation, makes an in-depth review of rates being charged by different utilities, for example, and that process is subject to appeal through the court system. That provides a very good level of protection that we just don't have in this kind of a bill. This legislation essentially requires a third-party negotiator to provide documents to the Attorney General for review, and then the Attorney General must look at the proposed contracts, decide if there is any anti-competitive harm, and within 60 days issue a decision. And if you look at the Supreme Court decisions that have talked about whether or not that kind of review satisfies the state action doctrine, they simply say it does not. They've made it clear that the active supervision prong of the state action doctrine is very rigorous, and it's designed to ensure that anti-competitive conduct is shielded from antitrust liability, and that the state has to make the challenged conduct its own. And this requires a level of supervision that we don't believe is present in this bill.
Are there any more questions? Thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
Pat Center.
I'm Pat Center. I'm president of the Alaska Nurses Association, and I would like to reinforce what Kathy said previously. I'm not aware that we were approached about being included in this bill, and I'm not certain, considering our concerns about it, whether we would want to be. Our concerns about this bill have been two. One would be the impact of it if price was included on the cost of health care in Alaska. This past week, there was an article in the Anchorage Daily News stating that the cost of health insurance for small businesses went up an average of 10% last year. An article in the USA Today the week previous stated that the cost of providing health insurance to California state employees went up 25% last year. The economy cannot sustain this type of exponential growth indefinitely. The committee substitute for Senate Bill 37 that came out of House Judiciary, as we said earlier, excludes price. And from the items, the large physician groups can negotiate and add protective language in it for non-physician health care providers. We strongly urge you keep these provisions in the bill. Our concern, however, is that since the version of SB 37 that passed the Senate last year includes price and does not include specific protections for non-physician providers, that we urge that you be vigilant in the last days of the session to make sure that the final version of this bill is similar to the version that passed out of House Judiciary.
Are there any questions for Pat this time? Thank you, Pat. Bob Lauer, did you want to make any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was here to answer any questions there might be from members, either on medical necessity or effect on cost of care or availability of insurance.
Are there any questions for Bob at this time? Representative Davies has a question.
Bob, if this bill were to be enacted, would it have any impact on the number of people in Alaska who are uninsured?
Through the chair, Representative Davies, this bill would clearly not have the kind of devastating effects that a bill containing price provisions might have had. But the testimony on the bill in previous committees has been that it's extremely difficult to separate price and non-price or quality of care issues. In fact, I believe the FTC at some point has observed that they've never really seen a negotiation involving non-price items that didn't seem to have price at the heart of it. So that seems to be where most of the discussions go. So it is clear that a bill that really did focus on non-price elements would be far less harmful than a bill that focused on fees, but it's difficult to separate the two. And if it did impact price, then it could affect the availability of coverage. And I believe starting tomorrow, Anchorage Daily News has announced a significant series on the uninsured, medically uninsured, and the cost of providing services to the cost of medical services and the difficulty of obtaining insurance for them.
Any other questions? Thank you, Bob. We have Mary Beth Gardner in Fairbanks. Or Toke, I'm sorry.
Hi, this is Mary Beth. I'm in Toke.
Go ahead.
I would love to support the comments of Kathy Diesel. I'm a family nurse practitioner and also a nurse midwife. I've been practicing in rural Alaska for 13 years. I oppose Senate Bill 37. There is a blatant omission of mention of advanced practice nurses who have, since the 1960s, provided primary health care to numerous Alaskans, largely in rural or underserved areas. This bill could potentially limit the practice for nurse practitioners. Also, negotiated contracts could limit the ability of consumers to choose an advanced practice nurse or other non-physician health care provider. This is a cumbersome piece of legislation. I anticipate that the wording of this legislation could limit choices for Alaskans, and I question that this is in any way a necessary piece of legislation. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Thank you. So we'll go come back to Juno here, and Marie Darlin.
My name is Marie Darlin, and I'm here representing AARP. You've already received a letter from our state office saying we oppose this bill for many reasons, and some of which we know have already been eliminated from the bill. I'd like to say we support what the previous speaker said of many issues that we see as problems in this bill, too. And I won't bother going through what we told you in the letter, but we know that health care is very important, and we also know that our AARP members are some of the, you know, people who use health care the most. But we would like to see any health care legislation that is passed, we'd prefer to see that the legislation really addresses improved care rather than ways that some people may be making profits or so forth. And we have a lot of questions about even the substitute bill that you have now, and some of those questions have been raised by other people who we haven't had a chance to study it that much to see what else we want to tell you about it, our feelings on it. But we, again, don't think that this bill, for many reasons, is necessary, and in its current situation would oppose it. And also we're concerned that it doesn't really offer any opportunity for any consumer input into this issue, which if you were going to set up something like this, we feel would be important. It.
Any questions? Thank you. We'll go to OffNet. We have a Jim Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, this is Jim Jordan, and for the record, I am the Executive Director of the Alaska State Medical Association, and I'm here today to testify in in favor of SB 37. I had some remarks I was going to make, but I think they've been pretty well covered by some of the previous speakers, including the bill sponsor. However, if I might, Mr. Chair, I would like to respond to some of the comments and questions that have occurred before. And so if that's your pleasure, I would continue.
Yes, you may respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, in regards to the circumstances involving concerns brought forth by the nurse practitioner, that this bill could provide a vehicle, or amendments to this bill could provide vehicles for groups of physicians acting in a manner that would restrain trade in the healthcare marketplace. It's my belief, and it is the belief of AMA legal counsel, who has reviewed this bill on a number of occasions, that such activities would be illegal currently, would be illegal if this bill is adopted, such activity were to take place, and would be illegal if this bill were to be amended in some form in the future. That's the first issue. Secondly, and I apologize for not recalling the name of the advanced nurse practitioner that spoke to the circumstance of an offer of support of a bill that would deal with advanced nurse practitioners being able to utilize the same mechanism as what SB 37 provides for physicians. If my memory serves correct, I believe that offer was made by Mr. Haugen in a work session that took place in December of 2001 with Representative Murkowski. And there were representatives from the Nursing Association here, and I believe they're, if I remember correctly, their lobbyist was there as well as representatives from the insurance industry. Next, the question regarding the sufficiency of the second element required for a state action doctrine exception to be allowed is that there be sufficient state oversight of the process. The AMA League Council has testified in previous committees that there is sufficient oversight that is evident in the bill. The bill provides an outline for elements that the Attorney General's office must take into consideration and when reviewing the results of such a negotiation. However, the bill also provides for the Attorney General's office the ability to adopt a regulation, and we fully expect that they would adopt regulations to provide the flesh, if you will, for the structure that's provided in this bill. One of the Supreme Court cases that the progeny of the seminal Supreme Court, which case, which is Parker v. Brown, which is a 1943 case, is a case called the Tycor case. And it's been pointed to on various occasions as being instructive in this situation. We, as well as the AMA legal counsel, do not feel that it is instructive because it provides for a court decision that is dealing with a situation that is quite different than what we're talking about in the instance of Senate Bill 37. The Tycor case involved a group of title insurance companies that formed a rating bureau and then filed an agreed-upon rate with the insurance departments of several states. The central question in that case was whether there was a sufficient act of oversight provided by the various state insurance departments. And the Supreme Court decided there wasn't. And I'm not an attorney, and I will say this, but in looking at that case, I don't think anyone would find their decision surprising in that in one instance, the rate that was filed was allowed by one state's insurance department. Even when they asked for additional information, that information wasn't provided for, I think it was either 7 or 8 years. The other distinct difference here is that in the Tycor case, we're talking about a group of independently competing insurance companies getting together to arrive at a title insurance rate. There's no other involvement in that process other than the oversight by the state. SB 37 allows for circumstance in which it's a group of physicians that are negotiating with a very capable contracting partner, a large insurance company who's very well able to take care of itself in those negotiations. And then the result of that, that negotiation is what eventually gets to the Attorney General for the extensive oversight. And if I conclude, and I'm sorry I'm going a little long here, but I felt that this was important to talk about. But Mr. Charles James was the outside legal counsel for the Medical Association in the District of Columbia when it was pursuing its state action doctrine exception legislation back in the year 2000. Mr. James's background is such that he worked in the Federal Trade Commission in the Reagan administration, and currently Mr. James is an assistant U.S. Attorney General, and he heads up the U.S. Justice Department's Antitrust Enforcement Division. And if I might, I would like to read you what Mr. James had to say about a circumstance in which a lawyer was criticizing the oversight brought about in the D.C. bill, which is not that much different than our bill. As a matter of fact, in my opinion, the oversight provided in SB 37 is great. So if you'll indulge me, I'll just read this quickly.
If it isn't too long.
One paragraph.
Okay.
It is true, the proposed legislation does not rely on elaborate pricing mechanisms to fix the outcome of the negotiations. From his letter, it appears that Mr. Hartwell, and this is the lawyer who's providing criticism, would have the district insinuate itself into every facet of the negotiation process, establishing, among other things, a framework for actual negotiations and a procedural mechanism for evaluating the fairness of negotiated terms and conditions. But the active supervision requirement does not require the district actually to sit at the bargaining table. Such a narrow interpretation, indeed, would turn the district police power involving the state action doctrine on its head. The underlying rationale of the doctrine, again, is to free the exercise of the district police powers from federal interference. Mr. Hartwell's understanding of the active supervision requirement would effectively preclude the district from adopting more progressive regulatory policies like those embodied in the act that take advantage of the efficiencies inherent in a bargain for exchange. Rather than trying to impose bureaucratic notions of fairness, the Act relies on the self-interest of the physicians and the health plans to drive the bargaining process toward the most efficient result. At the same time, the mayor, and you can substitute Attorney General in the case of SB 37, retains the ability to fix certain parameters before negotiations commence and to review the end result. This structure ensures that the district has the final say on the agreement while securing the efficiency benefits of a private bargain. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Could you fax that written portion to 465-6813, please?
I'm sorry, 465-8163?
6813.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Mike Wigan.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Chairman Mulder and members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Mike Wiggins, and I am a Vice President of National Accounts for Aetna. I am responsible for the State of Alaska Health Plan, as well as other large private sector healthcare plans in Alaska. First, rather than reiterate all the reasons for our opposition to the bill, I have attached these arguments in written form and have provided copies to all committee members. These arguments are very similar to those prepared by the Division of Insurance, the Department of Law, and presented by letter from the Federal Trade Commission. I would like to take my brief opportunity today instead to try to rebut the arguments that the proponents of Senate Bill 37 have used in the House Labor and Commerce and Judiciary Committee. One argument is that insurers in Alaska force physicians to accept contractual terms, such as so-called gag orders or unilateral reduction in fees. This is simply not true. These issues are prohibited under current statutes, including the Patient Protection Act, which was passed in 2000 to deal with contractual protection. We have yet to hear a which is neither illegal nor can be demonstrated to be an actual use by an insurer in Alaska. The second argument is that physicians cannot get together to discuss quality of care issues without a change in the law. The Federal Trade Commission currently allows this to take place and has issued written guidelines. According to both the Federal Trade Commission and the Department of Law, Senate Bill 37 is inconsistent with those federal statutes, so attempting to expand the circumstances on which collective negotiations can take place will not be successful. The third argument is that insurers are so dominant in Alaska that physicians have no choice but to accept the terms and conditions of contracts sought by health insurers. If that were true, then the cost of health care would be substantially lower in Alaska rather than the highest in the nation. We urge you to discuss these market conditions with the Division of Insurance and to review their statistics on market share in Alaska. It is ironic that these issues are still alive. In a state with no HMO and the lowest percentage of PPO networks in the country. I have also attached a recent article from the Wall Street Journal which indicates the reverse market situation is now a problem. Large chains of hospitals and medical providers are merging together to increase their pricing power in the U.S. market. In Alaska, with single community hospitals and a relatively small number of physicians, that is a problem more likely to arise than a dominant insurance company. I can answer any questions I'd like to.
Could you fax your written testimony to 465-6813, please?
I can do that.
Thank you. Representative Croft has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to ask the Representative Edna the two questions that I've been asking of the other witnesses. Do you believe that this bill satisfies the state action doctrine, and do you believe that physicians can negotiate medical necessity as a term now collectively, or can they under SB 37?
Based on what I've heard from federal regulatory agencies, I do not think that Senate Bill 37 in its current form will allow people to discuss the term talking about, I don't think it'll pass the state action doctrine. As for medical necessity, I've heard that standard out here, and I think there's a misconception here about medical necessity that insurance companies just sit around here as people with non-medical knowledge that talk about medical necessity. My company employs around 150 physicians that when there's any decision made on medical necessity, it's done by another physician. And if it is appealed by another physician, I mean, if we want another specialist to look at it, we'll have another physician look at it, too. And for many of our contracts, we use outside agencies other than ourselves to take a look at medical necessity. But as it's written, I don't think that medical necessity is encompassed in Senate Bill 37.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one follow-up on that last answer. So do you believe that a group of physicians could negotiate for their own definition of medical necessity within the quality of care exception, if you will, to the FTC prohibition on physician concerted action?
Actually, I'll probably add that question when you state it again here. If you're asking, medical necessity is currently something that we is defined in many of our contracts here, and we adjudicate our claims according to that definition. And you're asking if a quality of care medical necessity, I currently don't probably have a good answer to that. I don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Wiegand. Jack McCrae?
Yes, this is Jack McCrae, and I'm a Senior Vice President for Premier Blue Cross, who Blue Shield of Alaska. We have continued to oppose this bill over the last 3 years, mainly based on the rate and fees section of it, because of the cost driver that's incorporated with the rates and fees. We can see easily double-digit rate increases in Alaska just due to this legislation. With the rates and fees out of it, as has been mentioned earlier, we don't believe this is really a necessary piece of legislation because the Federal Trade Commission in a number of areas will allow negotiations and allow us to sit down, allow medical physicians to sit down and allow negotiations with us on other than fees. In time, as I think Director Laura mentioned, it's awful difficult to separate anything from rates and fees when you start talking about negotiations in a variety of areas. The other concern we have with this bill is we have said consistently in Alaska that we are not afraid of competition in Alaska. As been mentioned earlier, there are only a few carriers in Alaska, and we believe legislation like this will keep competition out of Alaska rather than which will increase rates, have the potential to increase rates, and not be good for the consumer. Over the last couple of years, in 2000, we negotiated with the Medical Association on the Patient's Bill of Rights, and we sat down over a number of meetings with Representative Roepberg and discussed the Patient's Bill of Rights we could all agree on, and we ended up getting a document that went through the legislature and signed by the governor. We would be more than willing to sit down with the Medical Association and work through the same process in relation to this bill, either during the interim or if the time we have enough time to do it between now and the end of the session. But overall, we still don't feel the bill is necessary. We have a large concern that rates and fees could be put back in at a very late hour of the session, which would be a large cost driver for Alaska. If there are any questions, I'd be more than willing to respond if I could.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you. I think it was your testimony that this bill's been around for 2 or 3 years, and there hasn't been any negotiation at this point. Why would I assume that there would be any in the next week?
I sat down with the head of the Alaska Medical Association last summer in Anchorage, and that was the purpose of me flying to Anchorage, to sit down and say we'd like to sit down and discuss this issue and discuss legislation we could agree with, and there wasn't a real strong response to do that.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is anybody else on teleconference that wishes to testify at this time? Is anyone here in the audience wish to testify? If not, we'll close public testimony. Are there any amendments to the bill? What's the wishes of the committee?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move out. SB 37 with the attached fiscal notes with individual recommendations.
Any objections? No objections. The bill moves from committee. Individual recommendations. Attached fiscal notes. Next, we'll go to Senate Bill 229.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Deborah Grenman, staff to Senate Labor and Commerce Committee and Senator Ben Stevens. Senate Bill 299 would amend the Workers' Compensation Act to provide for an additional panel for the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board in a South Central venue. This is needed to help provide more hearings in that area of the state and will address the need to reduce the lag time between when a worker files a claim and obtaining a hearing. The Alaska Workers' Compensation Act requires hearings to be conducted by panels of the Workers' Compensation Board. A panel consists of a labor member, an industry member, and a designee from the commissioner's office. While that's good for a mix for deciding types of cases, the panel members also have full-time jobs, and it makes it difficult, and there are a number of cases in backlog right now. Enactment of 299 would provide much-needed relief to the Workers' Compensation Board. That's it.
Are there any questions for the sponsor at this time? Is anyone that wishes to testify this time? Representative Foster?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move out SB 299. Out of committee with the attached fiscal note with individual recommendation.
Is any objections? Not the bill moves from committee. Bill 345. Senate Bill 345.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Jerry Burnett. I'm staff to Senator Lyda Green. Under the Federal Individuals for Disabilities Education Act, school districts are required to provide rehabilitative services to qualifying students. Currently, the federal government pays approximately 16% of the cost of services required by IDEA in Alaska. The balance is paid out of the state foundation formula. To the extent that these students qualify for Medicaid, federal law allows for schools to bill the state Medicaid program for many of these services. However, currently Alaska state law does not authorize school districts to be Medicaid providers. Senate Bill 345 authorizes the Department of Health and Social Services to promulgate the necessary regulations and to contract with school districts to reimburse the districts for rehabilitative services for students who qualify under the Medicaid program. Currently, 42 other states fund school-based services under the Medicaid program. Under the provisions of Senate Bill 345, the school district pays the state match for the Medicaid services it receives. The only state cost under this bill is the cost of promulgating the regulation and some administrative costs. School districts benefit by receiving the federal matching dollars under the Medicaid program for services that they must provide regardless of how they're funded. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions? All right, no, thank you. We have John.
Thank you, Chairman. For the record, my name is John Sherwood with the Alaska Division of Medical Assistance, representing the Department of Health and Social Services. I just very quickly wanted to say our department supports this bill. It recognizes a cooperative effort between my department and the Department of Education and Early Development and school districts to obtain and use federal Medicaid funds to provide services to Alaska children. And I'm available to answer any questions on the fiscal notes or the mechanics.
Could you talk to your fiscal notes?
Certainly. We have two fiscal notes. One in Medicaid services actually reflects the expense of paying for the services. Under the legislation, school districts would bill the Medicaid program on fee-for-service like other providers do for Medicaid-eligible children who receive services. And as part of the provider agreement with between the Medicaid program and the school districts, the districts would receive full payment for the services but agree to reimburse the state for the state match requirement of the Medicaid services. So as the bill shows, we anticipate eventually to fund over $7 million worth of services a year, but approximately $3 million of that would be returned each year by the school district to constitute the state match for the Medicaid program. Again, the school districts wouldn't have to pay anything until after they had been billed and reimbursed by the state for the Medicaid services. Then the second fiscal note we have is just a small administrative fiscal note, which is some expenses necessary to make the system changes in our claims payment system to accommodate the new school district providers and the new service type. And also, we believe we need a small amount of ongoing staff support to do initially policy development, but then work and provide support to school districts and quality assurance and some help with the billing. So.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bundy.
On the Medicaid reimbursement, it's basically just trading dollars then. We fund the public schools and they give us some of the money we gave them back on Medicaid. Is that accurate?
That's correct. We pay, currently the federal government pays just under 60% of the cost of Medicaid services. So we would pay, for example, for $100 worth of service, the school district would pay us back $40. So the net gain to the school district would be $60 to provide services they already have an obligation to provide.
Mr. Chairman, it seems a little illusionary, though, to say, well, it isn't going to cost the state because the school district's going to reimburse us. So it's still state dollars, right?
That's correct. But it's state dollars they're already having to spend under their obligation under the IDEA.
Just truth in budgeting. Thank you.
Any other questions for the sponsor? If not, thank you.
Thank you.
For you, commentary. You are the sponsor, I think. Representative Foster.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move SB 345 out of committee with the attached fiscal notes and within the budget recommendation.
Any objections? If not, we'll move from committee with attached fiscal notes. Is there anything more to come before the committee? If not,
I don't know exactly what we're hearing tomorrow. We have about an hour to get it up, get the bills made up, get the list made up for tomorrow. So nothing more to come before this committee. We will stand adjourned until 1:30 p.m. tomorrow.
You have to stay late because you got your right.
I'm not, I can tell that. No, actually.
Okay, we'll stand adjourned.
I'll come late, I get to leave.